Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's time to expect more from our students. It's time to start rewarding good teachers. Stop making excuses for bad ones. It's time to demand results from government at every level. It's time to prepare every child everywhere in America to outcompete any worker anywhere in the world.
30 issues in 30 days. Issue 9. Does Obama have a Republican education policy? You heard that clip. If the teachers' unions are among the biggest supporters of the Democratic Party, they may not feel they're getting their campaign donations money's worth from this president or that of their many Obama votes, as the president is basing federal aid to states on new work rules the teachers' unions opposed. More pay for performance, less placement by seniority, new approaches to tenure, more charter schools, longer school days, longer school years. So we will get specific now and also compare the Cuomo and Paladino education agendas in the New York State gubernatorial race, and you may find some of that surprising. My first guest, as we first talk about the national angle, is our Jennifer Cohen, policy analyst with the Education Policy Program at the New America Foundation, and Damon Hewitt, director of the Education Practice Group at the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. Damon and Jennifer, welcome to WNYC today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Jennifer, is this president pursuing what would have previously been seen as a Republican agenda?
You know, it's an interesting question. If you look at the blueprint which the Obama administration released a few months ago, on its face, his policies aren't that different from the Bush policies. However, if you turn back the clock to 2000 and 2001, the Bush policies wouldn't have been considered very much to be Republican policies either. You know, they increased federal oversight of states' education policies more than they ever had before and dramatically increased the Department of Education spending as well. So we're really looking at what has perceived to become the Republican policies as opposed to what would be traditionally considered Republican. That said, you know, there are some very important differences in the details between the Obama administration policies and the Bush policies.
So, for example?
You know, we're still measuring achievement. We're still holding schools accountable. We're still overlooking or increasing oversight on teachers. However, we're changing the degree to which the oversight is punitive. So, for example, under the Bush policies, under No Child Left Behind, if a school failed AYP, adequate yearly progress, for any one student subgroup, so if African-American students in fourth grade failed their math exam, the entire school would be considered to be failing AYP. Under the Bush administration's, there wouldn't be as much of a wide range for the definition of failure. Instead, the Obama administration is looking more specifically at the bottom 5% of schools in America and how they're performing and what we can do to really improve and change the way that those schools function. So it's a much more laser-like focus on how we can do school improvement. And then for the other schools that are struggling but aren't in the bottom 5%, the Obama administration is really looking towards the states to help support those schools and to put in good quality interventions.
Now, Damon,
and in a lot of ways, you can consider that focus on the states' influence and interventions to be a bit more of a states' rights issue.
And certainly we've seen those debates in the headlines here in New York and New Jersey as they compete for that race to the top funding, the Obama administration putting the onus on the states to make certain changes, very much having to do with teacher pay for performance and other teacher accountability items and the expansion of charter schools, again, traditionally more conservative positions, putting that onus on the states, making it become statewide news stories, certainly here in New York and New Jersey and elsewhere around the country. And Damon Hewitt from the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, I see that one of the recommendations in a report that your organization put out is to shift the focus from competitive grants for a few states to incentives for all states to embrace systemic reform. So go into that a little bit.
Right. Our organization published a framework for education reform. We co-published it along with several other civil rights organizations. And our frame is this. We have known for quite some time that the status quo is unacceptable. that we really are in a state of emergency when it comes to education, in particular for African-American children throughout this country. And so we know that what the president's blueprint has done has done a lot of good things. It's shaken things up a bit. But what we know is that we have to go much further. For example, competitive grants frameworks only help a few students in a few states. Now, those students who get those benefits, that's fantastic. That's fine. And no one would oppose that. For sure. What we have to do is take that foundation and then build upon it and go much further so that students all across the country can get those same benefits. There's no reason why public education in this country should work for some students but not for other students. And that's the dissonance that we're addressing, and that's the gap that we're trying to close.
In general, are you happy with the particular directions that the Obama administration has been taking toward that end?
What we're happy with is that the administration came up with something new, innovative, but even more importantly, that the administration is now listening to the civil rights community, to parents and students themselves. We've taken a number of delegations of students, parents, and even sometimes teachers to Washington to speak with the administration, to speak with leaders on Capitol Hill about how we have to improve upon the start that the president made with the blueprint.
We can take a few phone calls with listener reaction to the Obama Education Agenda, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you're a teacher, is he alienating you? Are you saying, uh-oh, this is another Bloomberg Klein administration, this Obama-Duncan administration? This is not what we expected from our progressive president of hope. 212-433-WNYC, or are you feeling more positively toward him than that, teachers, or anyone else? 212-433-9692, as we ask, true or false, President Obama has a Republican education policy, or any other way to look at that set of agendas. 212-433-9692 for our guests, Elizabeth Green from Jennifer Cohen from the Education Policy Program at the New America Foundation, and Damon Hewitt, Director of the Education Practice Group at the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. So, Jennifer, politically, how are Republicans reacting? They're calling him everything from a socialist to a Kenyan anti-colonialist, you know, on economic and foreign policy. What's the GOP saying about his education agenda?
You know, it's sort of interesting. The GOP recently released, I believe it was the Pledge for America, something along that line.
Pledge to America,
they
right?
They did not mention education once in that document. So it's interesting to see how, though the Obama administration is talking about education a lot right now, the GOP is sort of shying away from it.
Or they don't find anything to disagree with.
I don't know if that's actually the case. I think right now the interesting thing with being on Capitol Hill and being a representative or a senator in America right now on either side of the aisle is that they're looking at what is my state getting and what isn't my state getting. And these days, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, if your state didn't get a Race to the Top grant, you're not pretty pleased with things right now. And that's sort of the interesting thing about the Obama administration move towards more competitive grants, is that that starts to transcend the partisan issue and becomes more of an issue of who gets what and who is really benefited by these policies. And so you get an issue a lot of times for states that are more rural, they tend to have less capacity to apply to competitive grants. So you start to get sort of more, less obvious distinctions between the states besides whether they're red or whether they're blue.
So, Damon, do you think there's dissension within the Democratic Party about what the president is doing on education? They're certainly in New York, you know, for example, on some similar things that Mayor Bloomberg is doing, and he's not in a political party, but he's trying to improve education. He's trying to do it with, I think, similar kinds of standards-based accountability as President Obama. And I see another one of your agenda items is public and community engagement in education reforms. And that's what we hear from a lot of Democratic Party politicians in New York City, is the public and the community are not being engaged. So when they go and try to shut down failing schools in Harlem, instead of the parents say, oh, thank you for closing the dropout factory in my neighborhood, they say, wait a minute, you didn't consult us on what needs to be done to replace this school. So they're defending the school. Do you see the president doing, in effect, the same thing?
What we've seen in the last few months is the administration listening. So, for example, when Secretary Duncan spoke at the NAACP conference just a few months ago, he acknowledged we need to do more on parental engagement. We're going to try to at least have some modest increase, at least in the budget for parental engagement, and we also know that we need to listen to communities when it comes to turning schools around. No one in this country would disagree that we need to have standards for equity and excellence, but part of the problem is that the debate has become so polarized between those who favor a certain kind of education reform on the one hand and those who say, well, you just support teachers' unions and you're retrograde. The problem is that that political debate actually does not benefit children. What benefits children is hearing from them and hearing from those communities and hearing what they believe their needs are, and that's what we try to put forward in our framework document.
Let's take a phone call. Principal Joy, who we know is a retired New York City public school principal. Principal, thanks a lot for calling. Hi, Joy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Okay, I believe that this education issue will be the defining issue of President Obama's legacy and the defining issue of our country's legacy. If we, whether you are for education or against education, everybody thinks they are an expert in education.
True. So how do you...
And or have some objection to it. But everybody wants to be involved.
How's he doing, in your opinion?
I think he is doing... This is his issue. This is, he has hit it. He won't have to campaign anymore. All he'll have to do is follow through with education.
Thank you very much. Susan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking on this issue, because this is exactly what parents are experiencing, that this is not just a Republican agenda. It's like Bush on steroids. And if you look at Race to the Top, it's the person overseeing it at the U.S. Department of Education literally said, look how much change we leveraged before we even spent a dime. They got all these state governments to make all these changes without really weighing whether it was good to have more charter schools. And just today, the report cards have come out in New York City with the district schools ahead of charter schools. So we really do. I really applaud the NAACP for stepping in and saying, slow down, talk to us. If you have the NAACP objecting to what's being done in black communities, then you have to believe something really seriously bad is going on. And if Democrats are sitting on their hands in November, it will be because of this education issue, because parents are so distraught and our voice is not being heard. And thank you for hearing mine.
Susan, thank you for your call. Well, Damon Hewitt, how much do you agree with her in terms of reflecting what the feeling might be out there? And is this one of the reasons that the NAACP has released its own framework?
Well, there's certainly a lot of concern out there, and I also want to clarify that I work with the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, and we're a separate organization, not just a name only, but a completely separate organization. But we did work with a number of the other groups, including the NAACP membership groups, to produce this framework document. There's lots of concern. We're glad that we started to see some positive response and some real focus on children instead of just the politics of the moment. Many people are talking about charter schools being the answer. We know that they aren't the sole answer, because only one in six charter schools even begins to outperform a regular school. We know that we need to hear from communities and how to turn schools around. I work with an organization called Turnaround for Children Incorporated that has done tremendous work in schools in New York City, in particular in the Bronx, working with existing assets, existing community members, existing parents and students. And I'm glad that we, along with others, have put the lie to this notion that these children cannot learn. I'm glad we've put the lie to the notion that we need some new fancy tricks in school governance to turn around education. That's what I think people have had a visceral reaction to, this notion that we have to take kids out of their environment, this notion that parents don't know what they're doing, this notion that there's no other way to educate the children besides the private market.
Colleen in Garden City, who I think
is... Yes, hi, Brian.
Good. Hi. You're going to echo Susan pretty much?
Well, I'm just calling as a parent who's concerned that President Obama had promised, one of the issues he had promised to address was these robotic testing, teaching to the test. And that doesn't seem, it seems like there's too much of a focus still on testing. And I'm a parent. My husband and I put our kids in private schools because we want them to learn to write and think critically. And we can't get that in the public school system.
Wow. Colleen, thank you. So there's a reason to take children out of public schools that may not have been failing in the, you know, in the strict sense, Jennifer, but taking them out to avoid the teaching to the test juggernaut. Is President Obama changing No Child Left Behind or its reliance on high-stakes tests? Because that's when we really started to talk about this.
Absolutely. So he's changing the role that tests play. So there still will be standardized testing. You know, we a bunch of states recently adopted the new Common Core of Standards. So you have almost national standards that all students across the nation will be held accountable to. And with that, there will become new assessments that really focus on those standards. However, the standards are no longer, you know, in fourth grade, can your child do X, Y, and Z? But they're standards that lead you towards college and career readiness. And part of being college and career ready is not just having rote memorization, but having the critical thinking skills. And I think, ideally, the Obama administration believes that this shift in focus will take away from the sort of robotic standardized testing that we have today to a more integrated testing structure that we have, where the tests will no longer be as punitive, and so they will be able to guide the curriculum in a more productive and well-rounded manner than they do currently.
I guess education is turning out to be the bipartisan issue of the 21st century in national politics. Jennifer Bush and Ted Kennedy co-sponsored No Child Left Behind. Now we have this Obama teacher accountability push with no dissension from the Republicans, except some Tea Party adherents who call for the abolition of the Education Department, as President Reagan once did. But I don't think they're going to be, you know, in the majority, even if a lot of Tea Party candidates get elected to the House. So is this sort of the, you know, in the era of polarization, the bipartisan election, but the bipartisan issue, at least from a Washington politics perspective?
I think this hope certainly is that it will be. You know, one of the most important pieces of legislation, in my opinion, that we can start to approach in the 2011 is the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And if we can get the Democrats and the Republicans to play nicely together and to produce a really strong and meaningful bill, that will do only good things for students in America, assuming that we're able to incorporate all the things that we talked about today, that we're able to get more community involvement and more parent input and student input and build a really well-rounded and meaningful bill that helps improve schools, but also improves the quality of the education that students are receiving on a day-to-day basis.
And Damon, before you go, I'm curious, whatever happened to class size as an agenda item? It was not mentioned once, unless I blinked and missed it, in the education reform movie that everybody's watching right now, Waiting for Superman. I don't see it in your agenda. And, you know, we printed out all 17 pages. I didn't read every word, but it's certainly not prominent, class size. Is that seen as swept away in favor of teacher accountability?
Well, it certainly isn't swept away. We do believe that class size matters. There's a group of the same name in New York City. But the important thing to really emphasize is that there's so many things like class size, like having quality teachers in the classroom, like sensible school discipline policy that doesn't use law enforcement as a disciplinary arm of schools. All of these things are being left out of the conversation, which is what the framework tries to inject back into the conversation. When we're only talking about politics in unions versus Superman or what have you, we're not talking about what really matters for children. And that's what we want to talk about as a civil rights community. So we're glad you focused on it on this program.
Thank you. And Jennifer Cohen, same question real briefly. Class size off the table?
I don't know if it's off the table entirely, but I think that, you know, in the 1990s, when the studies first came out about how class size, small classes improved student achievement tenfold, it was taken to be a real silver bullet, a panacea of change for education. And they implemented it across the country. You know, California had a massive class size law, and it turned out to be both expensive and not to have the real outcomes that they thought it initially would. So we're starting to realize that there's not any one piece So class size isn't the only thing you have to do, but that it's an important part of the overall arsenal of school reform efforts that we can put in. So it's got to be class size plus institutional organization plus teacher accountability plus improved recruitment, retention, and placement. So it's all of those things put together that will really, I think, change our schools rather than any one thing.
Jennifer Cohen, policy analyst with the Education Policy Program at the New America Foundation. Damon Hewitt, director of the Education Practice Group at the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. Thank you very much for coming on and talking with us about education in our 30 Issues in 30 Days election issue series.
Thank you so much for having me.
And part two of this segment coming up in just a minute, where we compare the Cuomo and Paladino education agenda, and you may find some of this very surprising.
What's been so encouraging is before we spent a dollar, a dime, of race's top money, you've seen 48 states come together to raise the bar, higher standards for everyone, to stop lying to children. You've seen states remove barriers to creating new innovative charter schools. You've seen folks get rid of firewalls separating student achievement data from teachers. There's been this extraordinary movement in the country before it spent $1. Now we have a chance to spend billions of dollars to help encourage that continued improvement.
Education Secretary Arne Duncan putting the onus on the states to improve education, but with incentives from Washington, as we've been discussing. So 30 Issues in 30 Days, our fall election series, Issue 9, Education. And now we turn to a comparison of Andrew Cuomo and Carl Paladino education policies for the New York State governor's race. On their campaign websites, Paladino's education section is short but easier to find. Cuomo's is contained in his policy briefing book and is reflected in the selection of Mayor Duffy of Rochester as his running mate, an education reformer in the style of Bloomberg and Obama. Some of Paladino's ideas, residential charter schools in the worst performing urban districts. That means boarding schools beginning at kindergarten, according to his site. That'll raise eyebrows. He's also for more charter schools, as is Cuomo. But Paladino also calls for consolidating public school districts from so many towns into county school districts to save money, very un-Republican, actually, and to use the savings to reduce class size. That's where class size shows up in this discussion. Of all places, it's Carl Paladino's website, also a more liberal agenda item that, as we just heard, the Democrats from the president on down seem to be marginalizing. So joining us now to talk about all this is Elizabeth Green, editor for the website Gotham Schools. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And I see that you've put up a briefing page on Gotham Schools Now, the education governor's race, a Paladino and Cuomo primer. But let's start with some of that Paladino stuff, because it's pretty interesting to me. First of all, mentioning class size, from what I've read of the Cuomo material, I don't see class size.
You know, I think the most remarkable thing is that Cuomo doesn't mention class size. Almost every elected official whose education position I've read mentions class size. I think even Mayor Bloomberg sometimes talks about class size, even though in practice he doesn't really favor reducing class size. So it's not as surprising to me that it's on Carl Paladino's site, although, as you said, some of the other things that he favors are quite surprising.
So the way he would get to class size, according to his site, is consolidating public school districts from so many towns, and of course we know every town has its own school district, into countywide school districts. So there would just be a Nassau County school district, a Westchester County school district, et cetera, et cetera. That is a really radical consolidation proposal, and of course it's designed to save money in the back office.
Right, and it's something that other states have done. When you have a lot of small school districts in states, you know, we are in New York City, we think of our gigantic school district, but in other parts of New York State, there are small little districts. I think in Rhode Island, they've tried this, and it's quite controversial. You cause a lot of upheaval on the local level. These are local elected officials who run the school boards, and you have to bring all of these things, pieces together. It's a challenge, but it can, I think it can save some money.
And the website does not say how a countywide school system would distribute funds from town to town. But I said it's a very un-Republican proposal because generally the more wealthy areas of any county, which tend to be more Republican, are, you know, the most dogged about wanting their educational independence. And they have the high property tax base that allows them to have strong public schools and maybe not have some of the problems on their doorstep that the cities in those counties would experience that then they would be consolidated with.
You're right. It could pit him against some of his Republican lawmakers, which would be an interesting new way for him to go after Albany.
And how about the boarding schools? Boarding schools beginning at kindergarten for then these would be residential charter schools, as the website describes them, in the worst performing urban districts. Does anything like that exist?
There's a boarding school in Washington, D.C. called the Seed School.
Right, and that's also portrayed in the movie Waiting for Superman.
Right. It's one of the heroes of the film, really. And that school, though, only starts in the middle school level.
Right,
so
exactly.
They have fifth graders reporting in to their bunks. But I asked an early childhood policy expert whether she had ever heard of any such thing. And she said, no, she had never heard of any such thing as a five-year-old reporting to boarding school. But
that borders on some of Palladino's other proposals to deal with urban poverty that have been so controversial, like housing, practically taking kids away from their parents if they live in dysfunctional homes and bad environments, housing welfare families in empty prison cells and teaching them personal hygiene, you know, all of those things that have already been controversial. So this kind of goes along with that, saying the state can sort of seize families or seize children, though he would say that it's voluntary. And I want to be clear about that. I'm sure he would say that it's voluntary, but have this kind of, you know, almost settlement house, but paternalistic approach to urban change.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing for a Republican to say in the same vein as you were just saying before. But on the other hand, it's kind of a natural conclusion of some of the practices of charter schools, just taken to a further extreme than most people would say explicitly. One of the effective, or, you know, you could argue, others would argue disturbing practices at some urban charter schools is to try to reset the problematic cultures of the inner city and poverty-stricken neighborhoods. And he explicitly talks about that in this education policy, as you said, citing dysfunctional homes and proper dress codes.
Yes. Now, you sent us a statement from the Cuomo campaign about education that what they sent to you in response to a request for this show?
They've published this is just excerpts from other documents published.
So you gathered
this.
They
helped me out by putting it together.
Okay. So what they want to emphasize, according to what you sent us, this starts with win the race to the top in education. New York must be the leader when it comes to education reform. This starts with increasing the charter school cap from 200 to 460. And then it continues, but increasing the cap won't result in more charter schools if we too tightly restrict where they can be located or how they can be approved. We believe that public review and consultation are important, especially when charter schools will be co-located with traditional public schools, but this cannot become a poison pill that prevents opening new charter schools. So this is where Cuomo starts, more charter schools, more easily approved.
Right. So that statement was written before the race to the top legislation was completed, it would seem, since those things have already happened. But you can tell in the statement that he's really siding strongly with the Obama-Bloomberg nexus of Democrats who favor this kind of reform on education that you've been talking about.
And continues that Andrew Cuomo, quote, also supports provisions that will require charter schools to increase their enrollment of special education and ELL students so that they are comparable to the levels of neighboring schools. And that, I guess, addresses, and we'll see if he actually implements that if he's elected governor, but that addresses one of the complaints that critics have of charter schools, which is that they have the opportunity to be more selective, and even though they're mostly done by admission through lotteries, they're not taking special ed students. So it's a form still of cherry picking that allows them to have better outcomes in some cases than traditional public schools, correct?
Right. Charter schools do their admissions by lottery, but then they can take different kinds of moves to once the lottery has been completed that result in different kinds of enrollment demographics than other schools. And it really varies from school to school. Some schools are not doing bad practices, but other schools seem to find ways to lower their special education populations. And it's a really complicated issue, but this does show that he's giving a nod at least to that criticism.
And he also gives a nod to consolidation, as we talked about Palladino proposing countywide school districts instead of town by town. The Cuomo document says the state can cushion the impact of slowing the rate of growth in school aid by eliminating mandates that dramatically increase the cost of providing a quality education and by encouraging smaller school districts to achieve efficiencies through shared services and consolidation. So he doesn't go as far as to say countywide school districts. He just says encourage smaller school districts to share services through some consolidation. What about the mandates part of that? Do schools suffer under state mandates that dramatically increase the cost of providing a quality education, as this says?
I have to be honest, I'm not completely familiar with this issue, but I think we're all going to have to familiarize ourselves with it because the budget is going to be the major education issue forthcoming. I think what he's referring to is what's called seat time mandates, which have something to say about how long students have to be in school who receive certain services, but I can't get into details.
Right.
But I think the important point is that the budget is going to be a huge factor in everything that goes forward with education. As much as class sizes, Carl Palladino might want to reduce class sizes, it's likely that we'll also have to talk about teacher layoffs. The stimulus money that prevented teacher layoffs is not guaranteed to continue by any stretch.
Right. Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
And that's true. And the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit, which was supposed to get a lot more money to certain urban school districts, certainly and especially including New York City, that were deemed unconstitutionally underfunded a few years ago, that rate of growth is certainly going to slow, if not be totally reversed. So it is a kind of a paradox for Palladino to be campaigning on taking a baseball bat to the state budget and at the same time wanting to increase class size. I guess somebody would have to crunch the numbers and see if he can really hire more teachers and not lay off teachers just through the consolidation plan that he's talking about. Anything else that we haven't mentioned?
I think it's interesting to talk about Andrew Cuomo and his decision to side with the Barack Obama Democrats, as somebody put it to me today. David Paterson has been nominally in this camp, sort of, speaking out about Race to the Top, but a really last-minute player. And other states that won the Race to the Top money, especially the first two states to do so, have governors who are really prioritizing this issue and now campaigning on their victory in Race to the Top. So it'd be really interesting to see if Andrew Cuomo emerges as a major voice on education in New York State.
And do you mean when you say the Obama Democrats camp that just as he's trying to get a lot of teachers to turn out and vote for him and maybe the teachers' union to make campaign contributions, that he's aligning himself with this call for weaker teacher tenure,
yeah,
for more pay for performance, for less seniority protections for where a teacher gets to work and all of those things?
He does seem to be aligning himself there. He's taken, the proverbial hedge fund money, which is real hedge fund manager money. Those people are the, financial forces behind the teacher tenure restrictions. And most of what that camp wants to do requires a change in state law. So if you watch Waiting for Superman and you see this message being driven about the problems with teachers' union restrictions and tenure restrictions, in New York State, a lot of those have a lot to do with the teachers' union, but they're written in state law. So if you want to make the changes that the Obama administration favors, and Joel Klein and Mayor Bloomberg and Michelle Rhee favor, you have to lead a legislative campaign to make serious changes. For instance, this week on NBC, Mayor Bloomberg made his back-to-school education statement, and everything he suggested almost would require a change in state law.
Well, we leave it there with Elizabeth Green, editor for GothamSchools.org. And there you have education as issue 9 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series. We've done both the national angle and the New York State governor's race angle. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And up next, comedian Joy Behar. You know her from The View, among other things. We will hear about health and politics, according to Joy Behar. And rumor has it that she is off the Carl Paladino Christmas list. We'll see if that's true.